We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
You're listening to Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Billy Idol wishes he can do Rebel Yell like I can do Rebel Yell.
Former El Paso Chihuahuas outfielder Cody Decker
wheels in a 1-0, swung on, hit a mile in the air, deep in left. It is gone! Cody Decker, a mile long, three-run homer.
Swing and a drive into deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone! It's gone! The Aces win! Cody Decker with a game-winning two-run home run! And the Aces have walked off Sacramento. Fastball high in the air, deep left field. This game is tied. Cody Decker with career home run number 200. And the Aces have stormed back. It's an 8-8 ball game.
Bernstein and Rahimi on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
I can grow a better beard than everyone in this room combined, and I just choose not to. That's what power is.
Interestingly defined by our next guest, Cody Decker, Score baseball expert, who joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. He is on Twitter at Decker6, and he is resplendent on our Twitch stream right now. He has all of his various awards and diplomas and certificates of authenticity behind him, so you know with Cody Decker, you're getting the real deal. What's going on, man?
Oh, you know, I'm just living the dream over here. I got all these, like you said, I got all these awards behind me. It turns out, after hearing that clip that you played for me coming in, I was actually not too bad. I didn't do anything in the big leagues, but man, oh man, in that 3A show league, man, I was good. 200 home runs, my God, where did the time go?
Oh, stop it. They were great home run calls, and that helps too. We have to shout out your license plate behind you. That is incredibly clever. Upper Decker? Was that your actual license plate, or did you just have it made?
I'd be lying. Okay, listen, I have a very, very, very strong aversion against customized license plates. That being said, this is a real customized license plate. I did not make it myself as an 18th birthday present. My brother got my license plate changed to Upper Decker, and it lived for 10 years on a 2005 Honda Element, baby, just like every pro ball player's dream was.
I'm with you on the personalized vanity license plates, because who wants to be anything other than anonymous? Because you never know where you're going to have to stop somewhere or pick something up, or you never know. You look, it's like, hey, look, Decker's over there. Stop buying a fleshlight or something. I mean, who? you don't want to be that guy.
Well, listen, I don't want to be that guy that gets into a political discussion. I've always personally been very, very much against the death penalty, with the exception of personalized license plates.
Fair enough. last night, there was a kerfuffle in the Cubs game that was interesting because it meant something was actually happening in the Cubs game. So I said, ooh, what's this? Did somebody on the Cubs do something on offense? Well, no. It was just Wilson Contreras taking exception to being hit. What is your sort of guiding philosophy on where the balance is between when you want to stand on the plate, when you want to get close in there and try to be advantageous in that regard, and what a pitcher's responsibility is to be careful enough when throwing inside?
The truth is, it's not the pitcher's job to be careful throwing inside. You'll meet any pitcher all the way up to the big leagues. No one is all that comfortable throwing inside. No one. The fact of the matter is, I think I've only played, I was a catcher for a good amount of years, and I only caught one pitcher, just one guy, who told me he didn't even want to see my body. All he wanted to see was that glove just inside that hitter's ribs. And for him, he only threw 88 miles per hour. He was a converted outfielder that became a pitcher. Coincidentally enough, he's the hitting coach for the Milwaukee Brewers, Jason Lane. He was a left-handed pitcher, made it to the big leagues both ways. Amazing. But Jason Lane was the only guy I ever met, and his reasoning was very, very sound, and I never heard a pitcher actually say it. He said, listen, here's the deal. If I miss that spot inside, I'm missing in, and I'm hitting him. Because if I miss 3 inches in, I give up one base. If I miss 3 inches over the plate, I'm getting up four bases. It's just, that's the way this game is played. I think Wilson Contreras was, you know, when you get hit a couple of times in a couple of days, anybody's tempers can flare. I totally understand. I think cooler heads, after all, will prevail. I think he knows it was not intentional. Brad Boxberger, I played with Brad Boxberger. He's one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He definitely didn't throw at him intentionally. And trust me, I don't like the Brewers at all. But there was nothing about any intent whatsoever. I think Wilson Contreras just got a little fired up. And honestly, I'm okay with it because, you know what? Anything that can fire up that Cubs offense right now, do it. I don't care. Have a 10-minute tea party at home plate. I don't care. Wake up.
See, Dan, see? I've got Cody on my side. Whatever you need to fire it up. You have to do
hockey. It's not, but you have to play harder.
Cody, Ozzie has talked about this to me. Ozzie Guillen. We've seen Rick Renteria do it with the White Sox. I think Wilson Contreras does that with the Cubs, being the catcher that he is. There are times where you have to kind of make a statement. You know better than I do what I'm trying to say about energy and just something to change things up in order to make something else happen.
You know, sometimes there's even, I had played on one team where there was a preemptive discussion. Hey, if he gets hit, we know he's going to get hit today, but if he gets hit, we all got to be out there immediately. We are out there before the hitter's out there. That type of thing. You know, that's discussed beforehand, believe it or not. Not always, but occasionally it is. And, you know, whatever it takes, when you're the catcher, it's your job to be the general of that field. Now, is that always the case? No. There's been plenty of catchers who could not be any type of field manager or captain of any sort. But, you know, it's up to Wilson Contreras to kind of lead the charge. You got a manager over there at Wrigley, who is a former catcher, former Cubs catcher. You know, he's going to get a lot of leeway. So it's just a matter of, is he that guy that can fire up this ball club? I don't know.
I just wonder where sort of the blood-brain barrier is there in translation of like, okay, I'm fired up baseball guy, I'm locked in, I'm here for my team, and now I got to walk up there and settle my heart rate down and start thinking about how I'm going to hit and go about the business of hitting. Like, I get it for hockey. I mean, all the dumb hockey fighting stuff, like, okay, because you can go finish off a check, you can go in your 35 seconds on the ice, you can go absolutely balls to the wall. A baseball player can't do that.
Says you. When I got pissed off, I just got laser focused. I wish more guys pissed me off when I played. I remember one specific encounter. I got into a fist fight with Mauricio Dubon, who was my shortstop, in the dugout. We got pulled apart because he made a terrible throw and he stared at me like I had a go-go gadget arm and can lift, jump up 25 feet to make the catch. He ended up apologizing to me because he was just said he was mad at himself. But we got into a fight in there, and I had to lead off that inning. First pitch, I hit a ball 470 feet. The first person standing at the top step was Mauricio Dubon with his arms wide open. He just said, "You're welcome. I got you there. I got you there."
That is a wonderful picture to paint. It really, really is. And it credits the point that we have. I don't know that the Cubs being pissed off is going to help with their offensive approach, but something needs to change.
You know, the fact of the matter is,
this?
How do you fix it? It's early in the season, so I don't think going on trying to fix it this early is worth it, but their offense is not what worries me. Their arms are what worries me still. That is not a team that can afford to not hit. That team doesn't hit, they do not win, plain and simple. And we know what that team is this year. They are shooting for a wild card spot. They have virtually no shot at winning this division. But they could feasibly win second place and snag one of those wild cards. They could feasibly go to third place and snag one of those wild cards. But it's a team that needs desperately to pitch. It's a team that desperately needs to hit because those arms in the back, especially in the back end of the bullpen, just aren't there.
they see a lot of pitches, and that's just sort of who they are and what they have been. And this is still the sort of end stage of a Theo Epstein constructed team that was constructed with that philosophy to wear guys to play long games, to see a lot of pitches, high on base percentage, etc. And I'm wondering if maybe it's time to say, if you're going to see one of those first three that looks like a grapefruit, go ahead and get out there and sock it, and don't necessarily feel that you have to get to 3-1 for that opportunity. I know it's facile to talk about that, and obviously organizationally no one's going to say it, but just to destigmatize a little bit, to say, you know what, if you see something early in the count, go get it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm of the ilk of being an aggressive hitter, especially with a ball club that has the firepower that the Chicago Cubs have. You got Jock Peterson. I love Jock Peterson. He's got a lot of pop, and at no point do I want him taking pitches. I want him being aggressive in the batter's box. I want him hitting doubles early in the count, and I want him scoring early in innings. Bryant. I don't want Bryant taking pitches. I want him being aggressive. He wants to have competitive at-bats, obviously, but I want him putting the ball in play with force. The majority of the pitches you're seeing in Major League Baseball are fastballs. 73% of the pitches you see are fastballs, especially early on in the count, unless you're facing a soft lefty who's throwing you soft stuff. And that you don't face that many guys that do that, and you don't face a whole lot of pitchers that pitch backwards. So you're going to see a fastball. I want that team to be aggressive. Javi Baez, he's about as aggressive as a hitter as it gets. Obviously, you have to have a counterbalance to that. You have to have other people that will work the count. You don't want starters going super deep into games. But it's all about knowing what kind of hitter you are, and trying to make everybody fit in the same box is just a mistake. It used to work really well in the early 2000s for the A's, but the problem is that mentality only will get you to a certain point. It's good for long-term going maybe to get to the playoffs, but in a short-term span to try to win a playoff sitting, you have no chance in hell of getting out of a divisional series.
I know you're concerned about the arms, but we have seen some encouraging performances. Trevor Williams, Jake Arrieta. I even liked what I saw out of Adbert Alsele, given what he's working on. How do you assess what you've seen out of the starters so far?
You know, out the gate, pretty good. Arrieta is a guy that I'm rooting for extremely hard this year. I love a homecoming. I love a player that goes back to an old city. There's something about it. And a guy that was as dominant as Arrieta was for a solid 4 years here in Chicago, how can you not want him back? And if he is even, he doesn't have to be the Jake Arrieta of old. He needs to eat up some innings and get guys out. If he can keep teams to 3-4 runs, that is more than enough. That team has enough firepower. The Cubs should win ball games. There are flashes of good signs. There are flashes of, I'm a little worried here. Another thing that was made me a little excited, Craig Kimbrell is looking all right. He looks like Craig Kimbrell again. I haven't seen this Craig Kimbrell in, what, 3-4 years? I'm excited that finally he gets that lead. He's going to shut the door.
And we're talking about what it means when some of these reconstructed or rescued assets, be it Kimbrell, who was not himself and has been reclaimed, if Jake Arrieta is a bit reclaimed because of what is being learned in Pitch Lab, because of what some of these, what Craig Breslow is doing, and what Tommy Hotovy is doing to help shape pitches, to use the Edgertronic cameras, to use Kinetrax, the buy-in, the way that sells itself, when a veteran like Jake Arrieta says, yeah, I'm listening to what they're saying. I'm listening to what they're saying about how I can optimize my effectiveness. I think, like you say, they don't have the margin for error because they're all throwing salad. Most of these guys, they need to listen.
I spoke to a guy in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. He was asking me about a player. And he specifically asked me how hard he was throwing. He wanted to know his actual, is he actually touching 97? I said, no, he's touching 95. He said between 93 to 94. And he's like, oh, well, let me know when he hits 97. And I just kind of said, he's sitting between 93 and 94. He's like, I can't even submit a guy unless he's throwing 97.
Wow.
And I just immediately stared. I'm like, my God, that's where baseball is. So, yes, Jake Arrieta listening to the R&D department. Every pitcher should. Any pitcher that doesn't listen to their R&D department is a fool, quite frankly. If you're not taking advantage of the Rapsodas, you're not taking advantage of the Edgetronic cameras, if you're not seeing your finger pressure and hand placement on your breaking balls, if you're not seeing what kind of cut you're getting on your cutter, it's all right there for you. Anyone that is pushing back on modern metrics is an is just going to be left behind. It's not about one or the other. That's the worst part. I don't like that we're sitting in a world of baseball where it's, hey, the old school guys, hey, forget about the metrics. I'm all for just, you know, get out there and grit your teeth and American elbow grease. Great. Listen, I have factual numbers that show me that how I can actually get better, throw harder, be more consistent in the zone. If you don't take advantage of that, you're nuts. It's not data driven. It's data informed. If you don't take advantage of the data, then don't play this game.
I'm picturing some sort of elbow grease right now. You had me with that one. Team that might need some more elbow grease defensively is the White Sox. They had a couple more miscues last night late on the West Coast. It's not just Nick Madrigal. It's the combination to me, but Madrigal will get singled out in this. He's a young infielder. He's still trying to learn, I think, the flow of the game. But it's going to start to cost them wins. How do you evaluate what the problem is for not just him, but defensively what the Sox are dealing with?
Well, specifically with him, like you mentioned, he's young. The leash has to be short, whether we like it or not. You can't have a leash out there that's too long if a guy's making errors left and right in the infield. This is a team that's meant to compete now, not compete next year. It's not about getting that guy out there, giving him shots at the big league level. He knows he can play in the big league level, but unfortunately, he's not carrying enough weight so far. So they might have to make some adjustments down the road. Now, I think the White Sox are going to be more than fine. I really do. The defensive miscues. Last night, I thought that was a bad scoring decision. I thought for the third run, I thought that was not a wild pitch. I thought that was a pass ball by Grandal. It was a changeup low in the zone. Did not go in the dirt. I don't know why Grandal. I don't understand this current trend of catchers. Not just Grandal. I don't mean to single out Grandal for this. But anyone that has a runner on base and a catcher has a knee down on the ground is just flat out madness to me. You're in a lacking athletic position, and you're going to give up way more pass balls, as you saw last night on a changeup that was called with a runner on third. That was a strike three pitch. End up being a drop third strike, ending gets extended, runner scores. And unfortunately, it was made a wild pitch, so that run is actually credited to Lucas Giolito. Lucas Giolito was throwing borderline Cy Young award-winning numbers last night. He looked fantastic, but that defense has got to pick it up, especially with the arms that the White Sox have. That's probably the best, if not the best, starting rotation in all of Major League Baseball.
One thing we know, Cody, that they've got the video back for the hitters this year, that they haven't had the full embargo on being able to use video because there was the overreaction, obviously, to the Astros scandal that changed all that. And there are so many hitters now that say, okay, great, I have this back. What is the best way individually? I know there's no cookie cutter way to do it, but how does somebody take advantage of in-game video from plate appearance without overdoing it?
You know, when I was in the big leagues, we had video, obviously, not to the extent of what the Astros did. The difference what the video is and what the Astros did was the video was connected to quite an Edgetronic camera, a camera you mentioned earlier on, and it was connected to an algorithm that simply just figured out the sign sequence immediately. So they were getting pitches to them instantaneously. That's not what people thought it was at first. They thought they were just watching on a camera screen, like on a monitor, just trying to figure out the signs. That's not the case. It's very difficult to figure out signs that way. Their sign sequences, catchers throw up 15 signs. They change them mid at bat all the time. It's very hard to actually pick signs. So the video being back, I think, was you know, getting rid of video last year was a complete overstep. But the fact that it's back, how does it help hitters? You know, it's more, I would use it just to see pitchers that I thought I might face later on. I wanted to see just a couple of pitches. What's his cutter action look like? What's his slider look like? What's his fastball look like? Does it have run? That was really all I would look at. I just wanted to see his pitches and where they were, nothing more. I had a scouting report that would always tell me exactly what pitches he threw, counts, leverage counts, what he liked to throw. That was more important to me than actually seeing the video. But I did want to see his fastball. I wanted to see his slider. That's the only two pitchers I ever wanted to see on video, just to see the action so I knew it before I came in.
Do you think it's distracting some hitters too much that they have it during the game?
Taking away from it. There's a phrase in baseball you'll hear all the time, analysis paralysis. It's there's a lot of teams that actually very, very much don't like players knowing anything about their metrics because it's very easy to misinterpret metrics. Somebody might say, oh, you know, your swing path is a little steep. Well, if your swing path is steep, what are you actually saying? Steep, like I'm chopping down on the ball? That's not what it actually means. What it means is I'm late. That's it. So when the guy tells you that your swing is steep, a guy might start thinking, oh, I got to start swinging up a little bit. No, that's poor coaching, and that's misinterpreting what you've been told. You're late to pitches, and you just got to hit the ball out in front. That's it. You don't have to change your swing any way, shape, or form. But players, if you've ever met a baseball player, we are not the brightest bunch. So we think that we can outsmart the game. We can't. It's the same game for the past 200 years, but we still think we can do it. Why? Because we're stupid.
I was around some players in the minor league level where the coaches knew that less was always more. And one of these guys ended up being a fairly successful major leaguer, but they knew that his circuits could fry so easily with information that they just wanted to sort of let him figure stuff out, because the moment they said something, they were worried that the whole system would just go kablooey on him because he couldn't handle it. And they were right. Like, it's just like, let him figure it out. If he asks, we'll say something, but we're not going to offer.
When I would look at video, like I would say, hey, I'm going to look at some video of myself if things weren't going well. It was not what you thought it was. If you thought I ever went into a video room and be like, okay, looks like my pivot is just slightly off 4 degrees. Oh, my launch angle, which, by the way, hitters can't actually manipulate despite what anyone tries to tell you. My launch angle is this. Oh, maybe I should get out here a little bit. No, I would just watch home runs that I hit to make myself feel better. That's it. That's all they all do. They don't break down what they did in that game. Hey, I'm not good at baseball today. Well, 3 days ago I homered. I was good that day. Let's look at that. That guy's good. I'm going to try that tomorrow. That's what we actually use video for. It's all just to make yourself feel like you're a superstar. We aren't, but we try.
Okay, what is this about not being able to manipulate launch angle?
Launch angle is not what you think it is. Sorry, launch angle is flat out not what you think it is. The launch angle craze is absolute madness. All it is timing, not manipulating launch angle. You want to manipulate launch angle? Hit the ball further out 3 inches. That'll hit the ball up in the air.
Contact point. Yep.
That's all launch angle is.
Okay. Well, then let me ask you this. Then how do we, if that's true, and it's probably a semantic issue here, but then how does the phenomenon of David Bodie happen? Where David Bodie's languishing below the major leagues, the Cubs notice his exit velocity is off the charts. It just so happens he's hitting it down on a downward plane, and he's hitting it really, really hard without an effective trajectory. So they change him, and they work with him, and they change his swing in a way that he is elevating the ball more. They would describe that as changing his launch angle. You're saying it may just be the same shape swing with a different contact point.
Most likely that's what it is. Majority of any time you make any swing adjustment, you're really just changing your contact point. That's it. If you're creating length back the opposite direction, everybody throws 97 plus now. You don't have the time to get on a certain plane, specifically if you don't know what pitch is coming. You don't know what pitch is coming, and I'm going to try and get on the same plane as the pitch. Why am I getting on plane to a pitch that I don't know what it is? I have to adjust to other pitches. I have to be ready for a fastball, adjust to a slider, adjust to a changeup. If he throws me that really good slider low and away, I'm not meant to hit that. It looks like a fastball out of his hands. I'm supposed to swing through that. A good changeup centered and under the glove, you're supposed to swing through that. However, if he misses that pitch up 3 inches, I should be able to recognize the pitch and make the adjustment. The end. That's how hitting is done. So trying to overanalyze and trying to get on a new swing plane, hey, I'm going to get on the same swing plane as that ball trajectory, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Not to mention, a lot of pitchers don't have the same arm. A lot of pitchers change their arm angle, so you can't get on the same plane anyways to a lot of pitchers. That's not every pitcher. Of course, you see a lot of video overlapping where guys are throwing out of the exact same spot. Those are amazing. You see a guy like Justin Verlander's overlapping, or you see a Garrett Cole overlapping. It's staggering. That's why those
Giolito
guys...
last night. Giolito's tunneling up stuff.
Same exact thing. That's why those guys are on a completely different level, because every pitch out of their hand looks identical. Same plane, same everything, entirely different action late in the actual break. It's incredible what those guys can do.
love a good GIF overlay of pitchers when the arm slot is exactly the same, and then you see like two different or three different pitchers.
Yeah, it's Pitching Ninja. Rob Friedman does those overlay videos on Twitter that are just they're mesmerizing, and they would make you never want to take up hitting as a job, because why bother?
Yu Darvish. That's the original one. Is Yu Darvish.
Well, last night, I believe it was Brent Suter got in at bat, and he came in after the game and actually did a press conference. And they asked him questions, but no one asked him about his at-bat. So the first thing he finally said, is anyone going to ask me? And then someone just said, yeah, that was terrible. He's like, yeah, the first thing I said when I came in is, how do you guys hit that? What? That's what this is? Yeah, it's hard, dude.
Hey, Cody, before we let you go, why do you not like the Brewers?
Trash organization. That's it.
Go on.
I played for them. They sucked. I hated every second. The only team. How about this? I take that back. They're not my least favorite team I ever played for. I would go back and play for the Brewers for free before I ever put on the Rockies purple ever again. I'll tell you that right now. That being said, the Brewers. I mean, I couldn't stand it. It was like you go to spring training. If you get a PB&J during spring training, that was like a filet mignon from City Hall.
Well, the Rockies stuff, you're not alone when it comes to the Rockies experience.
I despise the Rockies. I'm on the record with the Rockies. They suck. They suck. They suck. If you're a Rockies fan, get off the Titanic. At this point, you're just that band that's playing in the corner as the ship's going down. Root for another team.
So the Arenado trade had you feeling how?
You know what? Since I'm not so secretly kind of root for the Cubs. I've kind of always liked the Cubs my whole life. I didn't love it because he went to the Cardinals, and it just made me think, God, that Cardinals lineup is going to be very, very, very difficult to beat for the next 3 years. That being said, I liked it.
All right, we're desperately late. We could talk all day. It's too much fun. Cody Decker, we'll talk again next week. Thanks
so much for having me, guys. The Rockies suck. You bet.
Thanks, Cody.
That is Cody Decker, Score baseball expert. We got a little bit of White Sox talk coming your way. And then I want to close out before we get to Lawrence. And he's got Stoney at the top of the hour, so we got to hurry everything up right now. But I got to play something later in the show that had me laughing so hard yesterday, I almost got into a car accident on Lakeshore Drive. So we're going to get to all that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Oh, yeah! Jose Abreu, the door has been broken! A grand slam! Wow!
Well, we're pretty early in this season, and the big man already has two of those.
Keep doing that, Jose Abreu, and somewhere Les Grobstein does his home run dance as he can envision winning the home run pool here at The Score. Every home run is now connected to somebody involved in that pool. So that was last night on NBC Sports Chicago. By the way, quickly, breaking news. Arizona basketball, University of Arizona has parted ways with Sean Miller, this, according to Jeff Goodman. This is at Stadium. Had 1 year left on his contract after 12 years at Arizona. He was charged with head coach responsibility for failure to promote an atmosphere of compliance, and the administration stuck by him for 4 years. But Sean Miller out. Rough year for the Miller brothers. Archie out, and now Sean Miller is out. And the early rumors have Eric Musselman of Arkansas as a possibility for the Arizona job. But that's not why you called. White Sox are going to have to hit their way over some bad defense, and maybe we should just sort of settle into that possibility.
I wanted to ask Cody's thoughts on it because it's getting pervasive. Nick Madrigal last night with another bobbled ball, and I know Cody said he didn't like how it was scored, but I don't know. He's also gotten lucky from having things that should have been errors not scored that way. The night before, you could argue that he had made an error that led to a double, but they didn't score it that way. I don't like how much we have to pick on him, but it's getting troubling. And you know what's funny is we saw some errors out of the Yoan Moncada when he was at second base combination with Tim Anderson, but not like this.
No, and Jason Benetti said something to the effect of, well, I saw him play at Oregon State. This is not the kind of player he is. Well, I know it's a small sample, but this is the kind of major league player he is.
It's what we've seen at the major league level. The errors per game number is not good.
No,
and
the base
why do
running
the Sox
problems?
Always have to be the ones committing all the errors defensively?
They don't have
Simeon,
to be.
Tim Anderson, Madrigal.
Bringing Simeon back. Yeah, I do. Sadly enough.
And then he
I
fixed
do.
Himself. He was so much better in Oakland. Like,
well,
because of
Anderson
course he
got
has
better.
To be better somewhere else.
Tim Anderson struggled for a while with some of the routine plays, and he made himself significantly better. You put in the work. You see more grounders, and you put in the work, and you get better at it. When we come back, I have to play for you a piece of sound that it's the hardest I've laughed listening to the station in a long time. And it was Matt Spiegel's reaction after a Tony La Russa soundbite. I don't want to give away too much. I laughed my ass off yesterday and nearly drove off the road taking my kid to baseball practice. So we'll play that for you next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hey, Northside baseball fans, the Home Team Hero Contest is back. If you or someone you know can be recognized by Pat or Ron and Ron as the fan of the game, now through October 1st, nominate a first responder or frontline healthcare worker who also happens to be a super fan of the Northside team. It'll be great. We'll recognize a new fan every game. Go to 670thescore.com/hero for all the details and to nominate your local hero today. Sponsored by Proven Winners, the number one plant brand for annuals, perennials, and shrubs. Visit provenwinners.com. So, yesterday, I'm in my car taking my kid to practice, and Matt Spiegel and Danny Parkins and Spiegel were listening to a meandering quote from Tony La Russa, and the reaction to it was just phenomenal.
Tony La Russa, how's he handling your mean Mercedes as a phenomenon? I assume he's not aware of him trending on Twitter and the social media love of your mean Mercedes, but how's Tony La Russa experiencing that?
You know what he does is really, really good. I told him that too. After the game was over, the really good hitters don't throw at bats away. We've all seen it, right? The really good hitters, they go to bat 10 times. 10 times they give themselves a chance, and 3 times they get hits to 300 hitters. If you watch other guys, I don't know, what's the average? You play 6 or 7 days in a week. 6, 7, 8, 9 times they'll throw an at bat away because not really into it. And you're mean. He goes up there every at bat. Look at the last one. He took that walk. So, he does that with his talent. It's all about what's next. And he plays tomorrow. And I think it's really important for him to know he's got to earn. And if he has a good day tomorrow, he may play. He may play Wednesday. I know he shouldn't play the opening day at home. I don't think our fans are excited to see him. They'll be booed at intermission. The introductions. Oh. Nice. Yeah, some fun. We won a game. It's our first shutout for the combination of Ethan and Kurt and our pitching staff. Enjoy the moment.
Oh, God.
His pauses give me anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. Fun fact. Like, fun fact, the carpentry in the background was somebody building a coffin for Tony La Russa.
Jesus.
In case they ever need that.
Wow.
And the thing is, if you know Spiegs, the best part is knowing that he heard it. He had the joke like ready to go, like set to fire in the chamber, ready to go. And then for a moment he thought, should I maybe say it or should I not? And there's no question that once he gets to that point, he's absolutely saying it.
Fun fact, the carpentry in the background was somebody building a coffin for Tony La Russa.
Like, and then you picture like a carpenter literally like right behind him, like working on testing the hinge, just doing some inlay work. Oh my God, was that a fabulous moment? Oh God, that's inspired.
I can't like. The Speaks' delivery made it sound so casual, though.
And he knew
fun
it was
fact,
funny.
The carpentry in the background was somebody building a coffin for Tony La Russa.
Yeah, like the little precious delivery attitude, like he knew it was good. He knew it was good. He just sort of laid that right out there for you. Oh my God, what a great moment. That is as hard as I've left. I seriously, like, I almost lost control of my car and killed my family. So with that, let's do transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
Fun fact, the carpentry in the background was somebody building a coffin for Tony La Russa.
Radio.com is now Odyssey. Download the Odyssey app and listen to The Score and all the sports news, music, and podcast. An Odyssey station. This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
Back goes Bradley. Near the center field fence. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. An Odyssey station. The Score!
Where did your meme go?
He went to Jared!
Thanks to Ian Happ, David Faraday, and Cody Decker for joining us today. We could do that every day. That'd be just about right. Thanks to Connor O'Donnell and Brian Gertz, Jay Zawoski, and Jordan Malley. Time now for Transition, brought to you by CarX, Tire, and Auto. Ahead of his conversation with Steve Stone, here's Lawrence Holmes. Hey, man.
Oh, now I'm good now. What happened?
Yeah, we got you.
No, I'm looking at Jordan. Jordan's looking at me crazy. Like, because, you know, sometimes I screw up and I don't hit the mic button. I'm like, I hit the mic button this time.
Shane was yelling earlier in the week about the levels being down all the way to the left of the board. Now I experienced it firsthand. The level was down.
Ah, okay. Now I'm here.
Hello.
And what I said was that Cody Decker is a loon and I love him.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? He doesn't care.
I got to figure out, he's got a voice cousin and it was bothering me as I was driving in. I got to figure out who it is. He definitely has one.
Hmm.
Considering that I got Stoney and we've got Cubs pre coming up at 12:45, I'm not really going to probably have a chance to talk basketball, but God, was that great last night. It was so great to watch them play through Vooch and all the things that can happen. Like, there was a sequence where Vooch gets the ball in the post. He gets doubled. He passes out to the three-point line. The defense rotates. And for once, the Bulls are actually beating the rotation instead of the rotation beating them. It was just beautiful basketball.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. It was, I think that's the mode of operandi now when it comes to the Bulls, is this just everything going through him. I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. It was so nice to watch. It really was.
Yeah, I'm okay with it as long as it doesn't necessarily result in a contested, posted-up two-point shot. If that's just the origination point, if that's how you're changing the shape of the defense and making sure you're availing yourself of the best shot wherever it is and still looking for those corner threes, absolutely. You know, you can incorporate your most dangerous weapon. That's why you trade for him.
It was just wonderful to watch the type of basketball they were able to play. And I thought that Patrick Williams had a nice game yesterday. And It's hard because you see that, look, he's a draft pick and you want to see him like have these crazy outpouring of points. But I thought he had a super complete game, even with 10 points in last night's game. I just like him. I think that this is a good environment for him to grow. And the challenge for the Bulls is, how can Zach LaVine change his game without losing him?
Yep.
Throughout this transition where it seems to be the offense is going through the bigs a little bit.
Yep, keep him engaged. And it doesn't have to be, okay, now my timer has gone off and now it's my turn. I trust Billy Donovan to do that. I think they know it. I think they know that outside of X's and O's and redoing some of this stuff, that their big coaching point right now is reincorporating Zach LaVine into this new system and maximizing it.
100%.
Also less turnovers.
Yeah, that too.
He does a great overnight show. He's really, really good at it.
He's got two home runs in the pool.
Yes, because first pitch grand slams from Jose Abreu will work every time.
We'll take it.
We'll take it for sure. You two have a wonderful day. Stoney is on the line, so I'm going to talk baseball with him. Bye, Layla. Bye, Dan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.